Chapter 12. Galen Starfire is said to have thrown the blue Kakari into the sea, creating the Tlaxini Maelstrom, Neff said. If so, it may well be there still, but I have no idea how we would recover it. The white has been lost for 6 centuries. We once believed it to be at the Chantry, but your grandmother disproved that. The green was taken to Ladesh by Hrothon Steelbender and lost. I verified that Hrothon arrived in Ladesh some 220 years ago, but could find nothing more. The silver was lost during the Hundred Years' War, and could be anywhere from Alatira to Siora, unless Garrick Shadowbane somehow destroyed it. The red was cast into the heart of Ashwind Mountain, which is now Mount Tenji in Siora, by Ferric Fireheart. The brown is rumored to be at the Maker's School in Osine, but I doubt it.
Why? Gareth Orsul asked.
I don't think they could resist using it. With the mastery of Earth, those petty makers would become 100 times more skilled in a heartbeat. Something they made would appear sooner or later, and it would be clear that someone was making at the level they did of old. That hasn't happened. Either the men of that school are less ambitious than I believe possible, or it isn't there. The other rumor was that it was bound into Cairnavon's blue giant, the castle. I take that to be nothing more than a semi-educated boast. It's not a particularly clever place to hide a Kakari.
But we have a solid lead on the red.
When Verdmeister Quintus passed through Siora, he said the explosions of Mount Tenji are at least partly magical. The problem with that, and the blue, is that, even if we could get at it, there's some doubt about whether even a Kakari would be intact after having been exposed to so much elemental power for so long.
You don't give me much, Neff.
It's not exactly collecting seashells.
His voice sounded greasy. He hated that.
A deep insight. Gareth sighed. And the black?
Not so much as a whisper. Not even in the oldest books. If what I viewed was real and the Ladeshian isn't simply delusional, it's the best-kept secret I've ever heard of.
That is the point of a secret, isn't it?
Gareth asked.
Huh?
Fetch our Ladeshian songbird.
I'll be needing some dust.
Eline wanted him to sell the sword. For the past 10 nights they'd played their parts as if they were wooden puppets, except that once in a while, even puppets got to play different roles.
You don't even look at it, Kylar! It just stays in that chest under the bed.
Her dark eyebrows pushed together, forming the little worry wrinkles that he was getting to know so well. He sat on the bed, rubbing his temples. He was so tired of this, so tired of everything. Did she really expect him to answer? Of course she did. It was all words and wasted air. Why did women always believe that talking about a problem would fix it? Some issues were corpses. Hot air made them fester and rot and spread their disease to everything else. Better to bury it and move on. Like Durzo. Worm food.
It was my master's sword. He gave it to me,
Kylar said, only a little late for his cue.
Your master gave you a lot of things, beatings not least among them. He was an evil man.
That one stirred some rage.
You don't know anything about Durzo Blint. He was a great man. He died to give me a chance.
Fine, fine. Let's talk about what I do know, Eline said. She was on the verge of tears again. Damn her. She was just as frustrated as he was. What made it worse was that she wasn't trying to manipulate him with those tears. We're destitute.
We've lost everything, and we made Aunt Mia and Brayan lose a lot, too. We have the means to make it right, and they deserve it. It's our fault those hoodlums torched the barn.
You mean my fault?
Kylar said. He could hear Uli crying in her room. She could hear them shouting through the wall. If he'd dealt with Tom Gray his way, the man would have been too frightened to come within 5 blocks of Aunt Mia's. Kylar knew the music of the streets. He spoke the language of meat, played the subtle chords of intimidation, sang fear into the hearts of men. He knew and loved that music. But the notes of the songs Durzo taught weren't syllogisms. There was no thesis, counterpointed with antithesis, harmonized into synthesis. It wasn't that kind of music. The music of logic was too patrician for the streets, too subtle. The nuances, all wrong. The Wet Boy's leitmotif, whenever he played, was suffering, because everyone understands pain. It was brutal, but not without nuances. Without betraying his talent, Kylar could have dealt with all 6 street toughs and Tom Gray. The young men would have left with bruises and astonishment. Tom, Kylar would have hurt. How much would have been Tom's choice, but even if she had let him. Could he have shown Aline that? What if she had seen his joy? He looked at her face, and she was so beautiful he found himself blinking back tears. What the hell was that about? Kylar said, Why don't we just skip all the horseshit where I say the sword is priceless and you say that means we'd have enough to start our shop and I say I just can't do it, but I can't explain why, so you say that I really do want to be a wet boy and you're just holding me back, and then you start crying. So why don't you just start crying and then I'll hold you, and then we'll kiss for an hour, and then you'll stop me from going further, and then you'll fall asleep easily while I lie awake with my balls aching. Can we hop right to the kissing part, because the only part of our whole fucking lives that I enjoy is when I think you're enjoying yourself as much as I am, and I think maybe tonight we'll finally fuck. What do you say? Aline just took it. He could see her eyes welling, but she didn't cry.
I say, I love you, Kylar,
Aline said quietly. Her face calmed, and the worry wrinkle disappeared.
I believe in you, and I'm with you no matter what. I love you, do you hear me? I love you. I can't understand why you won't sell the sword, she breathed. But I can't accept it. All right? I won't bring it up again.
So now he really was the bastard. He was sitting on a fortune instead of using it to support his wife and his daughter and pay back people who'd suffered for him. But she was going to accept him. How noble. The worst of it was he knew. Damn it! He knew, because he could always see through her, that she wasn't grabbing the moral high ground to be a bitch. She was trying to do the right thing. It just made the contrast between them that much more pronounced. She doesn't know me. She thinks she knows me, but she doesn't. She accepted me thinking Kylar was just an older, slightly dirtied version of Azoth. I'm not dirty. I am filth. I kill people because I like it.
Come to bed, honey,
Aline said. She was undressing, and the swell of her breasts through her shift and the curves of her hips and her long legs roused the same fire in him. It always did. Her skin glowed in the candlelight, and his eyes fixed on the point of one nipple as she blew out the candle. He was already in his undergarments, and he wanted her. He wanted her so fiercely it shook him. He lay down, but he didn't touch her. The Kakari had cursed him with perfect vision despite any darkness. Cursed because he could still see her. He could see the pain on her face. His lust was a chain, and he felt a slave to it, and it disgusted him. So when she turned toward him and touched him, he didn't move. He rolled onto his back and stared at the ceiling.
Looks like I skipped everything to the ball's aching part. I shouldn't be here. What am I doing? Happiness isn't for murderers. I can't change. I'm worthless. I'm nothing. An herbalist without herbs. A father who's not a father. A husband who's not a husband. A killer who doesn't kill. That sword is me. That's why I can't get rid of it. It's what I am. A sheathed sword with a fortune sitting in the bottom of a trunk. Worse than useless. A waste. He sat up in bed, then stood. He reached underneath the bed and pulled out the narrow chest. Eileen sat up as he started pulling on his wet boy grays.
Honey,
she said. He dressed in moments. Blint had made him practice even this, strapping knives to his arms and legs, securing a set of picks to a wrist, and a folding grapnel to the small of his back, adjusting the gray folds of cloth so they'll dampen all sound, strapping retribution to his back, and pulling on a black silk mask.
Honey,
Eileen said, her voice tight.
What are you doing?
He didn't go out the door and walk down the stairs. No, not tonight. Instead, he opened the window. The air smelled good, free. He sucked a great, deep breath into his lungs and held it as if he could trap that freedom within him. At the irony of the thought, he let it out all at once and just looked at her.
Just what I always do, love. Kylar said. I'm fucking it up.
With a surge of his talent, he leapt out into the night. Ferl Kalius had been given the shit duty again. After his unit had been slaughtered during the invasion, he'd been picked for every bad assignment, throwing bodies off that rickety, half-burnt bridge, helping the cooks move supplies into the castle, helping the Meisters build the God King's new wall around the city. Double and triple guard duties, and never a choice assignment, like on the Vanden Bridge where the guards took a week's pay home in bribes every shift, just for letting a few crooks across. Now this. He looked at his prisoner with disgust. The man was fat, with the soft hands of a southern noble, though he wore his red beard in the Caledoran fashion. His nose was crooked, and his eyebrows looked like bushes. He stared at Ferl with obvious anxiety. Ferl wasn't supposed to talk to him. Ferl wasn't supposed to know who he was, but from the first, he'd had a feeling about this. Ever since a captain had told him the Werdmeisters wanted to see him, they'd requested him by name. He was to report immediately. That was something no Caledoran wanted to hear. Ferl thought it was about his little souvenir, the dragon-hilted sword he'd taken from the bridge. But that hadn't been why they'd wanted him, though he'd nearly wet himself when he saw he was speaking with the Lodrakari Werdmeister, Nefdada, himself. No Werdmeister was normal, but Nef was spooky, even for a Werdmeister. Ferl had stared at the 12 knotted cords representing the Shuras Nef had mastered for the entire time Nef spoke. It was too scary to look at his face. Nef had given Ferl, and Ferl alone, this assignment. He was forbidden to speak about it with other soldiers, forbidden to even associate with them for the duration of the assignment. He and the noble were confined to some tradesman's house on the east side. Meisters had hastily made part of the house a prison. Meisters had done the work. There was only one reason for that. This was so important, it had to be done instantly and without anyone's knowledge. Then, they'd left him with enough food for several months and forbidden him to leave. That left everything feeling wrong. Ferl Kalius hadn't become second, now first, in his warband by being stupid. He'd spoken with the noble and learned his name was Baron Kirov. The Baron claimed not to know why he had been imprisoned. He protested his innocence and loyalty to Kalador, and the fact he wasted his breath telling a mere soldier told Ferl that Baron Kirov wasn't very bright. Disobeying his orders, Ferl snuck away and found out that Baron Kirov had supposedly been murdered. The good Kaladoran Duke, Tensor Vargon, was now rotting in the maw for having killed a Cenarian noble who wasn't dead. That's when Ferl knew he was screwed. His imagination couldn't paint any picture in which things turned out well for Ferl Kalius. Why would you assign a man without a unit to this? Because you could kill him, and no one would notice. When the time came, Baron Kirov would be released or killed. The only reason to keep him alive when he was supposed to be dead had to be so they could produce him at some point. But Ferl? Ferl would just be evidence that the Verdmeisters were lying. I should have gone back to Kalador. He'd been offered a job tending the oxen of the baggage train. He'd almost taken it. If he had, he might be on his way back to his clan by now. But everyone who escorted the treasure to Kalador was thoroughly searched before they were released, and that would mean losing his precious sword. So he'd stayed. Sure, he could pick up a small fortune while they sacked the city, right?
I should kill you, Ferl said. I should kill you just to spite them.
The fat man turned a paler shade. He could tell that Ferl meant it.
Tell me, Fatty, he said. If the Verdmeisters told you that you could live, if you lied about who kidnapped you, would you do it?
What kind of stupid question is that?
Baron Kirov asked. So they'd known Kirov would play along.
You're a brave man, aren't you, Fatty?
What?
Baron Kirov asked.
I can't understand your accent. Why do you keep calling me 40? Fatty! Fatty!
I'm not 40, I'm 36.
Ferl's hand darted through the bars, and he grabbed a handful of the Baron's blubber and squeezed it as hard as he could. Baron Kirov's eyes widened, and he squealed and tried to pull away, but Ferl held him against the bars by his fat.
Fatty! Fatty!
He said. He grabbed the Baron's cheek and squeezed it with his other hand. The man flailed, trying to knock Ferl's hands away, but he was too weak. He wailed.
Fatty!
Ferl yelled in his face. Then he released him. The Baron dropped back in his cell onto his bed and rubbed his cheek and his love handle, his eyes misty with tears.
Fatty? He asked. Wounded.
Ferl was lucky he didn't have a spear on hand.
Get your fat ass moving, he said. We're leaving.